Marilyn Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2, for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 19, delivered on October 29th.
Today, stock valuation. Before we begin, I will take you to the screens with a special note. This is an important day. This is the anniversary of a historic event. You wouldn't happen to know what it is, would you? No, it's not the invention of the cheeseburger. It is the anniversary of the great crash, stock market crash of 1929. And we are hopeful that we don't have that, a repeat of that. But what would that be? It's 90 years ago today that the stock market fell 12% in the one day, which actually doesn't seem that tremendous anymore. We have pretty hard drops these days. It was, at the time, it was just unbelievable. And the stories that stockbrokers jumped out of the windows on Wall Street, that's not true. That didn't happen. However, it was a very sad day for a lot of rich fat cats, which gladdened the hearts of all the other people who had been suffering through the 1920s. And, of course, that stock market crash was a precursor to the Great Depression. It was not the cause of the Great Depression. It was merely one of the early symptoms of a deeply flawed system that had managed to entrench itself over decades and decades in the United States. So we may be on our way to that now, but for today, as you can see, the markets are actually fairly quiet, except the NASDAQ's down pretty hard. But as far as the Dow and the Standard & Poor's 500, they're just chilling today, as they often do. On a Monday, especially if there's no great news coming through, which there isn't right now. But as you can see, interestingly enough, with the Standard & Poor's 500, it actually started the morning pretty bullish, come roaring up, and then it topped off, and then it had a drop, and now it's just kind of bouncing around. So from here, it's hard to predict what's going to come. However, moving on to more timely subjects right now. The subject of today's lecture is stock valuation. How do we price a stock? In theory, we can do it pretty darn well. In practice, it is not all that easy. Any prediction that you get on what is the value of a stock is going to be fraught with peril. Remember what I said earlier. Always distinguish between the market value and the intrinsic value. The market value is the day-to-day value of a security. It bounces around a lot from one day to another. The intrinsic value is the underlying value. This is actually quite random around the intrinsic value. Now, it can bounce up and be overvalued or undervalued. What that means is that the market value is pricing the stock too high, and undervalued would be that it's pricing it too low against intrinsic value. So keep that in mind. What we are doing is intrinsic value. Market value is really hard to tell. Well, it can't be told to any great degree simply because it is subject to random forces. And when I say random, I am meaning that in the mathematical sense, probability sense. As I've told you before, stock market prices from day to day, hour to hour, are actually excellent ways to get a random number because we can't tell from one point to another. But so what I'm doing here is intrinsic value. what is the long-term value of a stock? So, for example, a Tesla right now. A Tesla. Really quickly, let me pull up one like that, just for something to have a good time with. TSLA. Right here. Right now, it's at $318.99. Over the past year, it has been as high, low as 177, and as high as almost 380. And right now, what is a little closer to its low. So what's the intrinsic value of this stock? Well, a simplistic approach would say it might be maybe near the average of the 52-week low and high. Probably, well, maybe not. Maybe it was the case that when it was at 380, that was closer to its intrinsic value, its long-term value. Now, if you're bullish on this stock, you would say that the intrinsic value is higher than what we see it at right now. If you're bearish, as this forecaster here, this forecaster for Yahoo, says that the stock's one-year target is 261. So in other words, this a person is seeing the intrinsic value as below $318.99. But that doesn't mean that there is some point in the future where it will settle down and stay at its intrinsic value. That's never going to happen. And I'm saying all of this just to warn you that saying the stock price is undervalued or overvalued, really, from day to day, if you're a day trader, if you're a fast-moving trader, that doesn't mean a thing to you. What matters to you is what it's going to be in the next hour or the next day, which could mean it's still overvalued or it's still undervalued. All of that in mind. Look. Here's a company's year, well, let me put this as a company's year, and it's free cash flow. Now, right now, year zero, year one, year two, year three, year four, year five, etc. Whatever. Okay, now, the first way that we do it is professionally is we forecast free cash flow. We do this as outside observers, and the company's probably going, well, the company will be doing this internally too. Because of free cash flow is how they find out if they need more money and plan for that by getting ahead of doing stock offerings or borrowings. Anyway, free cash flow. Let's say that for right now, for year one, we would say the free cash flow is $20,000. And I'm going to show you something on your calculators here. So please bring out your calculators. I'm going to show you a nice trick. And I want to point something out. The calculator actually does it more logically than Excel does. I am forever screwing up the Excel formula because it really doesn't do it in a technically correct fashion. But free cash flow, $20,000. Now we're forecasting for next year it's going to be $23,000. $24,000, $29,000, $30,000. Now what I'm doing here is an incremental free cash flow for a project. Okay, so let's say that the project ends here at year six. With $18,000. Okay. This is just a project. Now, watch how I do this in Excel. Oh. Let's say that the discount rate, and we've used the capital asset pricing model, and I'm going to say something about this for the project, is, oh, let's say 7.2%. Now, I'm going to pull up here, kill this, and where the open up the calculator. And again, this is actually a lot more intuitive once you get the hang of it than the Excel. Apps, finance. Now, go down here to number 7. NPV. Okay? Enter. Now, the NPV will start with putting in your discount rate, comma. Now, let me give you something for the free cash flow at year zero. Let's say that it is negative $100,000. Let's say it's a negative $100,000. So the next thing you're going to do is put in the 0 year value, which will be negative $100,000. And then I'm going to put in a comma. Now, you may recall that what I said, when you're telling the calculator, here comes the cash flow stream after the 0 year. You start with second brace, left brace. That's the one above the parenthesis. So second brace. And then you just pump in those cash flows. What have I got there? 20,000, comma, 23,000, comma, 24,000, comma, did I do that right? Yeah, comma, 29, is that? 29, comma, 30, comma, and then 18,000, including your salvage value at the end. Now, once you finish, you say to Excel, okay, I am finished with the cash flow. That means close that brace and watch it. It's hard to see that. If you do it wrong, it's going to be hard to see that you made the mistake on this LCD screen on these. Then close a parenthesis and say, find it. This is a positive project, you see, because the present value of those positives overwhelms the negative up front by $13,163. So we would say, yes, this is a go, this project. And then you can even do a what if. Well, let's change that discount rate or something like that. Or you could say, what discount rate would have killed the project? How high would the discount rate have to have been? Now follow with me. I'm giving you a little hint on what comes in the next chapter here. We can actually say, how high would the discount rate have to have been to kill this project? Well, that's actually fairly easy to do, and I'm going to do it the dirty trick way. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go second, enter, so I can edit this formula. It's brought it back up. Now I'm going to bring it back up over to the NPV. Make sure you see what I did there. All I did was edit a call to edit the formula, second enter. And it brought it back up. Now I'm going to take it back up to the NPV itself. And now I'm going to say apps, finance, and I'm going to go down and replace that NPV with IRR, internal rate of return. Now watch, when I come back out, see it has replaced it. The next thing you have to do here, you have to delete the 7.2 comma, because you're telling it to find an interest rate this time. You're saying, I want you, calculator, to show me what would have to have been there to kill this project. I'm guessing it'll probably be around 9%. I'm not sure. 11%, wow. So in other words, you could have raised that discount rate quite a bit and it still would have been a go. Now I'm showing you this now. Yeah, go ahead. Net present value. Yeah.
What did that 13,000 number represent again?
That represents how much more the future positive cash flows were from the original negative. In other words, you take the present value of all those ones year through five or year through six, and then you subtract off what it costs you out up front, and you're still 13 grand ahead. In economic terms, we would say that at a discount rate of 7.2%, this project actually generates an economic profit. Not an accounting profit, an economic profit, because that's what NPV does, net present value, calculates if it is an economic profit or an economic loss. And the internal rate of return tells you the discount rate where the knife edge is between an economic profit and an economic loss. Now I'm going to do this again. Don't sweat it if you don't get this the first time. But this is a great place for me to introduce this. It's so fast to do it on the calculator. And like I said, I will eventually show you in Excel, but watch me screw it up in Excel like I usually do, because it just doesn't make the same kind of sense as this does. See, the way it's done in the calculator, you're actually telling it what the cost was up front versus what the positive future cash flows were, and we get an answer right out of the box. Anyway, let me show you something here. Well, before I go on, I want to tell you something that is actually used in corporate finance. And I'm supposed to teach it in the next level of corporate finance, 341, and it is wrong. See this discount rate right here, 7.2%? That would probably come from the capital asset pricing model. That's where it should come from. However, many corporations, don't use the CAPM to get it. They use something else, which you will see later in detail, and I'll bring that up right here today to start that process. It's called the weighted average cost of capital, the WACC. Now, technically, mathematically, the weighted average cost of capital is just the weight of debt in your capital structure times the after-tax cost of debt. Now remember, because you get to deduct your interest expense, plus the weight of equity in your capital structure times the cost of equity. So in other words, let me show you really, just as a quick one. Suppose that debt in a company is $40 million and equity is, let's say, $60 million. So the debt plus the equity is $100 million. Now, the cost of debt to the company is 4.8%,
and the cost of equity to the company is 15.6%. And the company's tax bracket is, let's say, 35%.
Get all this down. Say what? The what is? Not for long.
The flat 21.
Flat 21 for corporations? No, it's not. Yeah, hang on.
Can you go over the formula again?
Say, explain it again?
Yes.
Okay, well, the weighted average cost of capital. Okay, what weight has debt? How much weight? So, for example, here, with $100 million, the weight of debt would be 40 over 100, which would be 40% debt. And the weight of equity would be $60 million of $100 million, which would be 60%. You follow that?
Yeah.
I mean, this one is, matter of fact, I'm going to show you a neat little trick in Excel here, probably on Thursday. But okay, now, so we've got the weights. Weight of debt is 40%, weight of equity is 60%. Now, the after-tax cost of debt is the cost of debt times 1 minus the marginal tax bracket. And I'm going to look that up in a second, see where the tax rates are right now. I believe it flattened out at 35%, but we'll see. So the WACC would be the weight of debt, 0.40 times the after-tax cost of debt, which would be 4.8% times 1 minus 0.35. That's the after-tax cost from that formula right there, plus the weight of equity, which would be 0.60 times the cost of equity, 15.6%. I always do the weight of debt actually as a, after-tax as a side calculation. But anyway, cranking it out here. Clear. I would do 40% debt times the pre-tax cost, 4.8, times 1 minus the marginal tax bracket, 0.35, plus the weight of equity, 0.60, times the cost of equity. Now, cost of equity does not have an after-tax because the dividends are paid after tax is calculated, 4.6%. Is that right, what I did? Okay, now, so the WACC on this would be 10.608%. And I'll do one of these in Excel on Thursday. What was it? 10.608%. That's the weighted average cost of capital. It is the one that, yeah. Yes, or you would be tortured by having to calculate those before you even began this. Practically speaking, you would probably, in a class like this, you would be given those, okay? Or it would be a... See, the only thing I really had to do was get the after-tax cost of debt. I was given the pre-tax, and I was given the cost of equity. Now, in a higher-level course, I would make a swat at it in intermediate 341,
and then in 349, I would take it all the way. It is actually not that easy to calculate the cost of debt and the cost of equity. Actually, the cost of equity is a little easier than the cost of debt. You see, here's the problem. See, I can say, okay, these bonds that they issued have a coupon of 5.2%. Okay, that's on my cost of debt. Well, first of all, no, because you'd have to take it after tax. But second of all, that's just the coupon. You really want to see what the market wants the company to pay, because that's what they're going to pay the next time they borrow money. So you'd have to find the yield. Okay, we'll go and look at the market value of the yield on them. Oh, but that's not enough, because this company has issued a number of debt instruments and of different maturities over the years. They've all got different yields. So which one do you use? Do you use the latest one they've done? Do you use an average? Well, no, that wouldn't be good, because some of that debt was a little bit and a lot, some of the other of that debt was a lot. So you could get into a real mess doing this for real. It's almost like work. So, I mean, just be glad if you're just given the cost of equity and the cost of debt and the marginal tax rate. Give me one split second here. I'm going to do this the stupid way. Small business. I was going to ask, I don't want the stupid federal corporate tax rate. Come on. I want the table. Really? Come on. I just want a stupid table. Okay, here it is. No, that's 17. Well, that's pretty much useless now. Federal business income tax tables. C Corp, AMT. Now, I don't use Wikipedia. Oh, there's the Deloitte. Now, seriously, I would be extremely, that's a small business, and they're approaching, we're talking about the mega business size ones. Well, I'll check into it. It might very well be. We were just calculating, projecting with a company that I'm consulting for right now. We were projecting, and they were using a 35% marginal tax bracket because it had flattened out. There was that bump from 35, and then they flattened that 39 out, and so we were using the 35. It might very well be. If that's the case, that would explain why we've got a $1 trillion budget deficit that you guys are going to have to pay for. But anyway, moving that off ahead, maybe it is 21. I'll have to look at that, call up, see if they've got it wrong in their tax program right now. If it is, we've got a major recalculation to do next week as we come towards the end of fiscal 2019. Might be. Okay. Anyway, let's try this. I'm going to show you something here. First of all, two formulas. Present value of a constant growth free cash flow, dividend, whatever. If it's a constant growth, then you can have the present value will equal the free cash flow, present value right now.
is a free cash flow at period one over the cost of capital minus the growth rate. And the free cash flow at period one would be the free cash flow right now times 1 plus the growth rate. And this G is the growth rate, the constant growth rate of free cash flow. This would be the discount rate. For free cash flow. So, watch this. You invest in a company that has just paid a 75 cent per share dividend that is expected to grow at a constant rate of 2.5% from now on. What is the intrinsic value price per share of that company's stock? I'm emphasizing the fact that this is again an intrinsic value. This will almost positive I am that this will not be the actual price per share right now. This would tell you whether it's a buy, a hold, or a sell for a long haul. Now, in other words, notice that in this one I gave you the price per share, the dividend that was just paid. The formula needs the dividend one period out. Now, I might in another problem or the homework might say, well, the next dividend will be. In that case, they've given you that period one. In this case, the price per share should be the dividend that was just paid, 75 cents, times 1 plus the growth rate of the dividends from here on out. Oh, now we need a discount rate. Suppose the discount rate, stop before I was finished. That you get, the discount rate you get from the capital asset pricing model is 8.6%. So in this case, it's 0.086 minus that growth rate. That's the R, and that's the G, and that's the 1 plus G up there. Just put it together. Don't think about it. Just key it in. And again, if they say, and I do believe in the, I think it's in one of the one homework problems that I have in your Cengage MindTap, that I gave you the dividend next year will be. But it's a constant growth. And if you were to crank that out, you'd have 0.75 times 1.0,
2.5. Whoops. Divided by, open parenthesis, the discount rate, 0.086 minus 0.025, close a parenthesis, enter. Really? Can I do that without screwing up? 0.75 times 1.025 divided by, oh, I see what I did. I didn't put a parenthesis, decimal there. Close parenthesis, 0.086 minus 0.025. Close the parenthesis, enter. $12.60 a share. That is intrinsic price per share. So if I saw this stock right now at, let's say, $10.80 a share, I would say that it's undervalued. Now, that doesn't mean I go out and buy it and tomorrow I'm rich. What that would say is that if I were to put this into a portfolio for the long haul, eventually it would find its intrinsic value, which is more. In fact, it might eventually find a value above its intrinsic value. But right now, it is underpriced at $10.80. To give you I won't tell you the name of the company, but right now I did the calculation for a very small genetics analysis company, and the price that the intrinsic price that I calculated per share was about $3.60, and right now it's trading around $1.50 a share. It's dropped clear down to $1.20. So I went long one round lot, 100 shares of it. Simply, and you know what? I'm taking an absolute beating on that stock right now. It's killing me. It was, when I bought it, about $1.60 a share. It's gotten down to about $1.20 now. Does that mean I freak out and I sell it and just lick my wounds and walk on? No, because what I calculated was a long haul value. It will eventually find its intrinsic value. It might be in a couple of months, it might be in a year, it might be in a few years. But just because I'm not making big bucks off it right now doesn't mean that my model is wrong. My model is fine, and it's worked long in the past. Yeah? And here, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to forget about it. I'm still rattled by that corporate tax thing and what we're going to do over the weekend to try to fix what happened, if that's the case. But yeah, okay. Here's the problem with weighted average cost of capital. Okay. Madam, I'm going to sell you back, boy. Madam, I am going to get a project together for you. Now, the cost of the capital to invest for you to use in this is going to be 7%. Now, this project is going to make you 7%. Does this mean you say, "Wee"? No, you're going to make nothing off it. You see, the weighted average cost of capital is measuring the risk balance within the company. Interest rates always represent risk. This is what the current risk balance, in this case right here, the risk balance of this company indicates that it is about 10.6% risky. Okay? Well, we can compare that to other interest rates and see if that's very risky, lower. But the point, though, is that a project that you're taking on, there's no reason why some random project you pull in is going to have exactly the same risk as your company. As a matter of fact, you would want the return on that project to be higher than the weighted average cost of capital, so you'd want to use a higher discount rate. Using the WACC, which again is very popular, is killing us, because that's not what the risk of a project is. If you want to make money off a project, you're going to have to take on projects that are higher, that have a higher discount rate than your weighted average cost of capital. Otherwise, you're not going to make anything off them. Now, that means that you're going to have to take on more risk, but at the same time, WACC is the worst thing in the world. But I'll tell you why it's done. It's just what you said. There is almost this sense that you would rather not use the cap M. It's easier because every company calculates its weighted average cost of capital. It just does it. That's something you do. But to go that extra step and go out there and dig around and get the cap M set up with the right beta for the project, et cetera, ad infinitum, well, that's just a little bit too nasty for most companies to do. They prefer not to do that. So we have this problem right now that you see if the WACC is used instead of the real discount rate, you're probably going to get higher net present values simply because you're discounting at a rate that's too low. And that means that companies are probably actually taking on projects that are going to end up beating them in the backside. And we do see that. Companies seem to want to take on projects that are riskier, that probably aren't going to be profitable, simply because when they did their calculations, they were using a discount rate that was too low for the future free cash flows. Now over here, this valuation method would apply to a very mature corporation that has already stabilized its dividend. It pays a dividend every year. That dividend grows at a modest rate year over year. It's essentially a company that is pretty old. Interestingly enough, if I'm looking at Target correctly, it is just about in the place where it has a constant dividend growth. And so that means that Target probably, well, I shouldn't say probably. Target, I did last semester, I valued the price of a share of Target using this constant dividend growth model. I got it almost to the penny. Now, is that going to work again? Oh, heck no. That was a once in a lifetime that I got that close. But there you go. That is something out there. Now, let me show you a little bit more realistic model. Madam, there is a reason that you are exploring this ocean, even though there's this horrible storm raging all around you, waves way up in the air. And then here comes, oh my God, here comes this giant squid. Okay? It's a terrible, terrible time. But out there on the horizon, you see this beautiful, smooth ocean. And the sun is shining way out there on the horizon. It's a beautiful sight. Now, of course, you don't get there because there's this whirlpool, a maelstrom, and then the squid goes down there, sushi. Yeah, and you were along too, and you survived, and you floated ashore. Man, that horizon sure was great, but sucked getting there, and we never did. This is called the horizon value method. It assumes that companies are in a very choppy time. Most companies are. But it also assumes that eventually in the future, somewhere down the line, they're going to stabilize or they're going to die. Okay? That's just how it's going to be. So we can look to something called a horizon value, a time when the company matures and it gets to the point where it has a constant growth dividend. But that's not going to be the case for some time to come. And so this horizon model actually has a lot of use to it. And it's kind of realistic. Even if we don't know exactly when, we do know the companies are striving, just like people do, for stability. They're trying, every person has a difficult time in his or her life, but then down the road you're saying, well, this will end, this will pass. Okay, look at this one. suppose that a company
expects to pay no dividend for the next 2 years, then in year three, it will pay a 15 cent per share dividend the following year, a 19 cent per share dividend, then the following year after that, a 20 cent per share dividend, and then the dividend will grow at 4% ever after.
This is actually a fairly realistic model, certainly more so than a little more applicable than the constant growth right off the bat. Let me show you how you do it. Now I'm going to take a timeline here, and I do these as timelines. Year one, year two, year three, year four, year five, year six, year seven, year eight. It's a little bit of a pain in the butt, but it's not too bad. Watch what you do. Okay, now. So it's going to pay no dividend here at year one. Didn't pay anything here either. And no dividend here. Then it's going to pay a 19% per share dividend. No, I'm sorry, 15. Then a 19. And then a 20. And then it's going to grow at a constant rate of 4% after that. So the dividend here at year six would be 20 cents times 1 plus 0.04. And now I've got it enough. I'm done. You're saying, well, wait a minute, fat boy, what about all those other years? No, I don't need them. Because you see, let's say there's a discount rate. Is 9.6%. I know the present value right here. That would have to be the 20 cents per share grown one period divided by 0.096 minus 0.04. That'd be the present value right here. Right here. You say, well, what about the 20 cents? That's included. Remember that this present value finds you one period before. What I find right here, this present value right here, is called the horizon value. That is what the company will be worth at year five, when it stabilizes. It takes a while to get around, get a, the less you think about it, the easier it'll be for you. Turn it on, clear, and all I have to do is just say 0.2 times 1.04 divided by, open parenthesis, 0.096 divided minus 0.04. The horizon value per share is $3.71. That's the horizon value. That is, at year five, this should be the price of the stock. It's intrinsic value. Well, what about right now? Oh, I can do that one easy. Watch that NPV formula at its very finest. And by the way, you should not use the NPV formula to do what I'm going to do. But do it anyway. Watch. NPV at a 9.6% discount rate, comma, a zero value on the year zero, there was no dividend, comma, open the braces. There was a zero value in year one. There was a zero value in year two. And then what was that? 15 cents in year three, comma, 19 cents in year four, and then, comma, at year five, 3.71 was the horizon value of the company. And I'll do another one of these on Thursday. But close a parenthesis, close a brace, I'm sorry. Close a parenthesis. It's worth $2.59 a share. That's the present value of the dividend up to the horizon plus the present value now of the horizon. And I get the value of the company, of price per share. Now, the last thing I'm going to do today, I am going to give you a quiz, and then after that, that'll be all I have for you. I thank you.